Hi, this is Christy Lee from the Canadian True Crime Podcast. Don't be put off by my weird accent. I am Australian, but I've been living in Canada for many years. My show takes a deep dive into some of Canada's most well-known cases, like Paul Bernardo and Carla Homolka and Robert Picton, the pig farmer. But I also tell the complete stories of many cases you probably haven't heard of. You can find me on your favourite podcast app or social media just by searching for Canadian True Crime.
10-year-old Juan Pedro Martinez disappeared when the truck he was travelling in was involved in a multiple car accident near Somosierra in Spain. Both his father and mother were killed in the accident, but no trace of Juan Pedro was ever found. As the truck was filled with sulfuric acid, investigators proposed at the time that the child could have been completely dissolved by the acid, but scientists later ruled that this could not be the case. Eyewitness reports suggested that an odd-looking couple stopped near the overturned truck shortly after the accident and they left with a package. Could they be connected with the disappearance? With so many feasible theories and so few answers, Interpol has been quoted as saying that Juan Pedro Martinez's disappearance is the strangest disappearance in European history. Hello, this is Insight. I am Ali, and here with me, as she always is Charlie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am doing well today, thank you. It's getting a bit chilly here, but I'm doing well. At 6 p.m. on the morning of June 25, 1986, a tanker truck was speeding down a mountain about 60 miles north of Madrid, Spain. The truck was travelling at least 85 miles downhill and it was picking up speed fast. Many witnesses would think that the driver had a problem with the brakes and he wasn't able to slow down. The truck would knock off the mirror of one car and then rear-end another. The driver of the car that was rear-ended pulled over and watched as the truck continued to speed down the mountain. The truck eventually came to a curve in the road, which caused it to overturn, and it collided with two other vehicles in the process. When it did this, the contents of the tanker spilled out. Unfortunately, the tanker was carrying 20,000 litres of sulfuric acid.
Emergency service workers raced to the scene and were there within minutes of the accident. When they arrived, there was already a fire because the acid had mixed with the dew on the grass. Lime was brought in to neutralize the acid and to stop the fire. There was further concern that the acid would reach the nearby Duratón River, which would cause an ecological disaster. Not only were there fish, flora, general wildlife there that would die if the acid reached the river, the surrounding towns got their drinking water from there. But fortunately, the lime, they brought in some sand too, I think, to neutralize the acid. That all worked. And from what I understand, this prevented any additional tragedy. Despite three vehicles being involved in the crash, there were only two fatalities. It would take 3 hours for emergency services to remove their bodies from the truck and identify the victims. They were the driver of the truck, 36-year-old Andres Martinez, and his wife, 34-year-old Carmen Gomez, who was in the passenger seat. Both of their bodies had been burned with acid. About an hour and a half later, a member of the Civil Guard called Carmen's mother to give her the tragic news. The news that her daughter and son-in-law were dead was almost more than this poor elderly woman could take. She then asked if her grandson had survived the crash. This left the Civil Guard confused. There was no child at the scene, and no witnesses had reported even seeing a child in the area after the accident. The woman went on to tell the Civil Guard that her 10-year-old grandson, Juan Pedro Martinez, was traveling with his parents in the truck. She wanted to know if he survived the accident. The Civil Guard told her that no child, dead or alive, was found at the scene. So where was Juan Pedro Martinez?
So a bit of background on the family. Andres and Carmen Martinez lived in Murcia, which is a city in the south of Spain, and Juan Pedro would be their only child. As a reward for getting good grades in school, Andres told his son that he could come on a work trip he was making. He had to deliver a tanker of sulfuric acid to Bilbao, which is in northern Spain. And Andres had been telling Juan Pedro about the beauty that is Bilbao for a while now, about the miles and miles of green pastures and the farm animals. Where the Martinez lived, it was semi-desert, so Juan Pedro became obsessed with Bilbao. So much so, Andres had promised his son that he could go with him next time he went there if he got good grades, which he did. Carmen would come along to look after Juan Pedro while Andres was working, and after they dropped the acid off at its destination, they would continue on to Basque country for a short vacation. What was common occurrence for Juan Pedro to go with his father on these short work trips in the truck, this would be the first time away from his hometown. Andres was an experienced driver, and he had driven the winding and steep roads of the Somosierra Mountains that led to Bilbao before. Andres owned the truck and he was paying it off in installments, but he did not own the tanker. This was the only vehicle the Martinez family owned.
On June 24, 1986, the family picked up the tanker at a nearby city at 7 in the evening before the crash. Just after midnight, Andres stopped for a short nap, and at 3 a.m., the family had made it to South Madrid, where they bought some gas. The family was last seen together and alive at 5:30 in the morning. They purchased breakfast at a restaurant on the highway north of Madrid. The employee who served them said she didn't notice anything unusual about the family. The parents ordered coffee, and Juan Pedro got some banana bread. They ate, paid, left, all without incident. The employee didn't see the family board the truck, but shortly after, she saw through the window that their truck was leaving the parking lot. Up to this point, the family's trip was proceeding as per schedule. However, about a half hour after this, the truck crashed. The first and most obvious explanation for the crash was that it was a terrible accident. There was something wrong with the truck's brakes, and it was out of control as it drove down the mountain. After the crash, the acid splashed and possibly even pooled in the cab of the truck, and Juan Pedro's body was dissolved in the acid. But there are a few problems with this theory. The first is that there was nothing wrong with the truck's brakes. They were checked and they functioned perfectly. Secondly, Juan Pedro's body just wouldn't have dissolved that quickly. It is possible to dissolve a body in sulfuric acid, but it takes a while. For example, it takes about 2 weeks to dissolve pieces of meat. Add in bones, especially teeth, those are harder to dissolve. Besides, his entire body would have had to been submerged for these remains to have been completely dissolved, not just showered in the acid. Besides, emergency services arrived at the scene not long after the crash, meaning there wasn't time for the acid to fully dissolve Juan Pedro's remains. And even if there was a pool of acid that the boy happened to be in after the crash, there would have still been evidence of his body left. And then there's the plastic and rubber. Plastics and rubber, they're both acid resistant, so you would expect investigators to find at least evidence of clothing like plastic buttons from his shirt or rubber from his shoes. So even if there was some perfect storm that allowed the acid to destroy Juan Pedro's body in such a short period of time, I mean, it's an even bigger stretch to believe that plastic and rubber were also dissolved. But honestly, his parents' bodies, they were intact. They were being affected by the acid, but not enough that they couldn't be identified on site. So there's no reason to believe the acid was strong enough to dissolve him, but it didn't even make his parents unrecognizable.
Before we can continue with the story, we just need to take a quick break for a word about one of our sponsors this week, Sugar Bear Hair.
One of the things I've noticed as I've gotten older, through every change and phase in my life as a teenager, then as a young mother, then through my 20s and now into my 30s, my hair keeps changing. And having healthy hair is important to me. It looks nicer. It feels nicer. And I've recently added Sugar Bear hair supplements to my daily routine. If you picture a celebrity with amazing hair, you can bet they have a stylist who clued them into Sugar Bear hair. Sugar Bear hair is a bestseller on Amazon with thousands of rave reviews. One review that I completely identified with says, "I would be an absolute fool to ever go back to those stinking horse pills that pass for hair vitamins. These do the job twice as well, and they don't have a horrible smell, and they taste incredible." Sugar Bear hair tastes like candy, made with the juice of real berries, but they contain everything you need for stronger and healthier hair. As much vitamin A as 4 cups of broccoli, as much vitamin C as a cup of cranberries, and as much vitamin B12 as 4 organic eggs. These nutrients, Sugar Bear hair fans have found, also contribute to nail and skin quality improvement over time. Go to sugarbearhair.com/insight for beautiful hair and a healthier you. That's sugarbearhair.com/insight. sugarbearhair.com/insight.
The next theory is that Juan Pedro's body was hurt in the crash and was burnt by the acid, and that he may have run towards the nearby river to stop the burning and died somewhere along the way. However, the Civil Guard doesn't think this is very likely. They performed an extensive search that spanned a radius of 20 miles. And the fact that Juan Pedro didn't come from the area and didn't know the area, he wouldn't have been aware of the river's existence because you can't see it from the road, so it wouldn't be likely that he would go looking for it. The Civil Guard dug into the sand and the lime to check if he'd been overlooked in the panic of the crime scene and had accidentally been buried. But the only thing they found was one running shoe, which was a different size to Juan Pedro's and was most likely there before the accident. It was then thought that maybe he had fallen outside the truck during the impact and the truck had landed over him. And because Juan Pedro was travelling without a seatbelt on, this was possible. So the Civil Guard brought in a crane to lift the truck to see if he was there, and he wasn't. Inside the cab, they found toys, children's cassettes, and boys' clothes, but there was no physical evidence that Juan Pedro was in the cab of the truck when it crashed. The Civil Guard even brought in cadaver dogs, and they couldn't find any trace of Juan Pedro. Also, while the scene of the crash was chaotic, no one remembers seeing a child there. The Civil Guard was left with more questions than answers.
They decided to look at the truck for any evidence as to what happened to Juan Pedro, and first thing they looked at was the truck's event data recorder. This is essentially like a black box for a plane, but for the truck, and it recorded the speed, when the truck stopped, how long it stopped, that kind of thing. In the 23 minutes before the crash, the truck went up the mountain. It traveled only 9 miles and stopped a total of 12 times. None of these stops were longer than a few seconds, and the last stop, which was near the top of the mountain, was the longest. This time, the truck stopped for 22 seconds. The most logical explanation for why Andres was only driving about 9 miles an hour and was stopping frequently was that they were in a traffic jam. We've all been there, but they were driving at 6 a.m, and traffic wasn't reported to have been that heavy at that time of day. Juan Pedro's family thinks that this points to an abduction scenario. They think that someone was driving in front of the truck going uphill, and they kept slowing down so Andres would be forced to continually slam on his brakes. At the last stop, the 12th in the series, that lasted the 22 seconds, Juan Pedro was abducted out of the cab, and the abductors drove off with him. This would also explain why Andres was later speeding and passing other vehicles in a dangerous way. So dangerous that everyone assumed his brakes weren't working. Andres was speeding after the abductors when he lost control of the truck, and that resulted in the crash.
Another one of the theories that are out there that is speculated on online true crime and unsolved mysteries forums is that Andreas and Carmen were responsible for their son's death, that something happened on the way up the mountain that caused the parents to panic. They disposed of the body in some bushes and then sped off so they wouldn't be caught, which caused them to crash accidentally. However, if there was an accident, if the parents killed their child and they disposed of him, I wouldn't think they would have made so many stops after that, especially that 22-second stop. If something happened to Juan Pedro and they indeed made that many stops to dispose of him in the woods, there would be no reason to drive then erratically and draw more attention to themselves. You'd think they would be trying to build a story up or try to flag down the first murderers they saw. Why run? The only logical answer is that they were trying to get to a destination in a hurry, and that would be supportive of the drug running theory or the chasing the abductor theory. The Civil Guard made an interesting discovery in the tanker. The tanker had three compartments, and only two of them were filled with sulfuric acid. The other compartment had a large quantity of heroin that was wrapped in a blanket. Andreas's family then admitted that weeks before the crash, the mafia was apparently harassing him and demanding that he carry drugs for them. Now, this would explain why Andreas brought his family with him for the trip. If he had left them behind, they may have been targeted by the mafia. This has led to speculation that Juan Pedro was abducted for ransom to ensure that the drugs got to their intended destination without Andreas trying to alert the police.
I saw some other sources that said that only traces of heroin were found, but I did translations on a few articles and it sounded like there was actually a bundle there, not trace amounts.
I think that's the problem you get when, I guess, you're dealing with a case that's not an English-speaking case, is when things are translated, sometimes they are translated wrong or they're translated back and forth, and you can lose part of the story. But it seems that all the Spanish-speaking articles do mention large quantities of heroin.
You know, the family said that Andreas wouldn't have voluntarily been involved in such matters, but I was reading an article, again, I had to have it translated from El Español, that Andreas was in debt related to, like you said, the truck was on payments, and he had to have had some significant repairs recently done on it that he owed money on. And sometimes people make allowances in their lives when they're desperate. He had a wife and child to support. He had substantial debt. You know, maybe one drug run that would help his family didn't seem like the worst thing he could do in that situation. Desperate people do things that we can't always reconcile with the person that we know they are. The family Juan Pedro's also said that the Civil Guard had checkpoints set up not far from the crash site to catch drug running. And they think that the mobsters abducted Juan Pedro at the top of the Soma Sierra Mountains and then told Andreas to go through the checkpoint with the drugs hidden. And it would be then at the other side that they would exchange Juan Pedro for getting the drugs back. One problem with this theory is that transporting a kidnapped child in a vehicle isn't better than transporting drugs. In a lot of ways, it's much worse. Hostages can make noise, attract unwanted attention of the police or other motorists, and they can escape. Also, the abduction of a child is a much more serious crime with more jail time than transporting drugs. I mean, on the other hand, Juan Pedro was 10. They could have controlled him through threats to him or his parents. It's also possible he was unconscious and they were passing him off just as a sleeping child in their vehicle, not, you know, a kidnap victim. And there's another abduction theory, and it's similar. The family was stopped on the mountain. Juan Pedro was abducted, but this time it was a pedophile ring or maybe organ traffickers or some other random encounter that led to Andreas chasing the abductors in his truck. Now, this doesn't really jive with the drugs found in the tanker. And about those drugs, they weren't found for a year. And the truck was sitting there. So I'm not confident in that chain of evidence, and I wouldn't say the drugs were 100% definitely there at the time of the crash. They could have been planted by someone trying to throw investigators off, or they could have been planted by someone with a motive close to the case, or they could have been stashed there by someone until they can move the drugs to another location. Now, I'm not accusing anyone in particular. I'm not saying the police planted them or were stealing them or anything like that. And it's more likely than not the drugs were there at the time of the crash. But more likely isn't, in my mind, good enough for an investigation. It has to be more definitive than that. There was an investigation into Andreas's business dealings, and investigators were not able to find anything that tied him to anyone in the drug business or any other criminal enterprise. So if the drugs were there at the time of the crash and Andreas knew that, it was probably, in my view, a one-off thing to earn money. Or in the kidnapping theory, it was an action designed so that he could go get his son back. Most of the abduction theories do end with Juan Pedro's death, as he would have been too risky to hold on to after the crash.
One aspect of the crash that both supports the theory that the mafia was involved for Juan Pedro's abduction and also raises some new theories are the eyewitness accounts of people who were in the area when the crash happened. One eyewitness was the man that Andreas rear-ended. After he was rear-ended, he pulled over and so did a white Nissan van. A man with a mustache and a woman with blonde hair got out of the van while an elderly woman remained inside. The eyewitness described the man having a foreign accent and the woman told the man that she was a nurse. She examined the man who was rear-ended and told him that he had no serious injuries, and then they both went to get back in the van. They told the man they were going to check on the other injured parties because one was critically injured. And this is where the story gets a bit strange. Two shepherds also reported seeing the couple after the crash. Except in this story, they describe the couple as being unusually tall and Nordic looking, and that they were dressed in white doctor's uniforms. The shepherds claim that the couple ran to the cab of the Martinez's truck and then took something from it and drove off. The shepherds couldn't see what the couple grabbed, but they thought it was a package. Now, it has been speculated that the couple was involved with the mafia and they may have grabbed some of the trucks that were in the cab of the truck. Other people think the shepherds didn't see anything, or maybe they missaw what the couple was getting out of the cab. That instead it was thought by some that the couple took Juan Pedro out of the cab. It is possible they did this because they saw him hurt and went to drive him to the hospital and then he died along the way. Then why not report his death to the authorities and what happened to his body?
Another possibility is that the couple abducted Juan Pedro after the crash. And this theory is one abduction theory that leaves open the possibility that Juan Pedro is still alive, having somehow survived the crash. Adding credence to this theory is a report that came to the Civil Guard in 1987, a year after he went missing. A man who ran a driving school in Madrid said that one day after the crash, an elderly, blind Iranian woman came to the school. That seems oddly specific, and a blind woman in a driving school. But okay, we'll keep going. The woman said that she had been in Spain for 6 months and she was looking for the American embassy. She was accompanied by a boy who was about 10 or 11 and he seemed disoriented. The boy had an accent that was the same dialect as the area of Spain that Juan Pedro was from. The man from the driving school swore that the boy was Juan Pedro. He was so sure that he went to the Red Cross post where the woman said they were getting their food, but the pair never returned there. There is speculation that this elderly woman was possibly the same elderly woman who was in the white van with the couple on the day of the crash. So members of Juan Pedro's family, they hope this theory is true because it means he could still be alive. Now, the Civil Guard did try and find the two shepherds to officially interview them for their investigation, but they couldn't find any shepherds in the area who would admit to witnessing the accident. However, whether there actually were shepherds and if they actually did see anything, it increased the interest in the case in the media. The investigators were soon being contacted by the usual range of psychics, UFO chasers, conspiracy theorists, and there was a range of fake sightings placing Juan Pedro throughout the Spanish countryside, all of which hindered the investigation.
I do have a feeling that the shepherd's involvement in the story is just an addition that happened later on to make the story seem more interesting with this strange, tall, Nordic-looking people. It does bring up ideas of aliens and UFOs.
I agree. I think it very much feels like one of those apocryphal things that gets added to the story to, I don't know, make the story more interesting, to try to fill in some gaps in it. You know, I don't think that if there's this Iranian woman, why was she in a car with Nordic-looking people in Spain? None of that fits.
And I think the 12 stops and the erratic driving, with there being nothing wrong with the truck, all of that leads me to believe that something happened on the way up the hill. The 12 nonsensical stops and Juan Pedro going missing are way too important to be pure coincidental. I do think there is some logic in them being drug runners and maybe he was taken as a safety deposit. The sad fact is I don't think we will ever know. As you said, Charlie, Juan Pedro was old enough to know who he was and remember who his parents are. I can't imagine he would have been kept alive and not at least attempted to contact his family by this point.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook at Insight Podcast, Twitter at Insightful Pod, Instagram at Insight Pod, or email us at insightfulpod@gmail.com. You can also support the show at patreon.com/insightpod. And a special thank you to Chesgrave Music for our new custom theme.